Good afternoon and you're very welcome to today's programme with me, Katie Hannan, sitting in for Claire Byrne. On today's programme, the Taoiseach fears something beastly will happen to his ministers if they go to North Korea. Nightmare to let. How can we protect vulnerable tenants from unscrupulous landlords? And the Dáil is back this week with water charge repayments top of the agenda. But first the news with Christopher McKevitt. This is Katie Hannan sitting in for Claire Byrne, and we have a packed programme for you today, so I will get right to it and introduce our panel. We have Fine Gael TD for Dublin South West and a former member of the Housing and Homelessness Committee, Colm Brophy. Sinn Féin TD for Waterford, David Cullinan. We have the leader of the Green Party, Eamon Ryan, architect and policy commentator, Mel Reynolds, and Niamh Lyons, the political editor for the Ireland edition of The Times. Now, thanks to the Nightmare to Let RTÉ Investigates programme this week, we all saw and we were able to see with our own eyes how some unscrupulous landlords are housing tenants. We saw the dangerously overcrowded conditions. We saw damp, mould, leaks, rodents, and some places described as fire traps, basically. Mel Reynolds, if I can go to you, wouldn't that, watching that RTÉ investigation, have given great comfort to unscrupulous landlords? I mean, the message from that really was, you'd be very unlucky to get a knock on the door from an inspector.
Well, that's a very interesting point. We were just chatting about that before we came on. I think certainly some people would be looking at that saying, wondering, adding the numbers. I think it's something like €26,000 was the annual, or it was a monthly income from three properties. And we saw the landlord in that particular instance smiling when he was being inspected by the fire brigade. So it probably gave some unscrupulous people ideas about what to do and how to generate bigger yields from their properties. I mean, given the fact that the reluctance by, in this instance, I think Dublin City Council came out particularly poorly out of this. I think they've recently come out with their hands up about it. The reluctance to address this, to answer queries, to answer complaints, you know, the time lags involved here are really, really worrying.
I think we should point out they have come out and addressed that and apologised and said it shouldn't have happened and it will not happen in the future. But certainly they have also come out, of course, and said that the kind of inspections that we are now hearing we need in order to deal with this is not really feasible given the resources that they are operating with, is it?
Well, I think there's two clear points to look at here. We can either react to this now and sort it out, or we can wait for a tragedy to happen or for people to die and to sort it out later. Either way, it'll have to be sorted out. We know already this year people have been evacuated from properties in Mountjoy Square and inner city properties with ladders. I believe, anecdotally, from the fire services, they're seeing problems like this happening all the time. So we either grasp the nettle now before there are fatalities, or we wait for 20 or 30 people to die in one of these properties and there'll be a lot of wringing of hands at that point. I don't think it's not an appropriate response to say we don't have enough staff. I think that's very weak and that's inexcusable.
Well, maybe we can hear exactly what the response from Dublin City Council was. We have a clip here from the Deputy Chief Executive of Dublin City Council. This is an edited clip of a number of his remarks yesterday in relation to this.
But the reality is, you know, when the fire brigade goes out, closes it down, the landlord's tenant walks away scot-free with 48,000 in his back pocket. So what we really need here is proper penalties, proper fines on landlords who do this. We need to get a clear message out to these unscrupulous landlords. This won't be tolerated in the future. But we do think that the legislation does need to be enhanced. There need to be severe penalties on landlords. And that would kill off this type of activity. Obviously, these people are preying on the vulnerable foreign nationals coming into the country. And some may have no status in the country. So they're obviously afraid to ring. And also, when we do a court order, these people are actually put on the street. They're homeless. And they just pile on top of the waiting list that we already have for homeless. We don't have the resources. We would need 100 more health inspectors to do a systematic examination over the house. We're relying on complaints. There's probably reluctance of tenants to make complaints because they realise they're going to be out on the street.
So there we are. We need 100 more. I heard in another interview that he gave yesterday, he talked about needing an army of inspectors. So this idea that seems to have gained traction, Colm Brophy, of this NCT-style inspection system for rental properties. Is that feasible, given what that would require in terms of an inspection regime?
Well, I certainly do think we need a vastly to increase the number of inspectors. I have a problem sometimes with the way we use the term, you know, landlord in this. I mean, to me, the people who do this are parasites. We're not talking about normal landlords running a business. We're talking about people who prey on the most vulnerable, who actually are willing to break the law, who are willing to put people's lives at risk on a daily basis. And I do think we need to look at strengthening the law on this. But I would be critical of Dublin City Council and other local authorities in this respect, in that I do think, you know, as we said earlier on, you know, you need to just immediately say, we are going to push inspectors into looking at this and to make a decision that these places need to be closed down. In effect, what you actually have is you have fire traps, you have death traps, and we will have a tragedy. There is no question. Unless these places are shut down, we will have a tragedy at some point.
But isn't it an extraordinary indictment of government policy if we have a Fine Gael TD in our studio saying we will have a tragedy?
Yeah, well, you've got to remember this. The government has consistently moved to increase the standards in rental accommodation, and the government has moved to increase the number of inspections. And we want to have, as the minister said the other day, we want to have 25% of all properties inspected. But what you're dealing with and what the programme exposed, and this is one of the really important things, and this is the small question mark I'd have over the NCT thing that you mentioned at the start. This operates effectively outside the law in lots of ways. They operate, as was shown in the programme, through social media. They operate in a closed world, particularly preying on vulnerable people who've just arrived into the country. So I would certainly support increased penalties. I absolutely think we need to look at this.
But if those, because I think but the Colin, action... Just to get you on that, if those people can find those landlords and those properties on social media, why can't the...
Well, I think the local authorities should be able to do it as well. I think if RTE and those people can find it, I think the local authorities... I don't think it is... Let's be clear. They put in some very, very bad accommodation, but the examples of 30, 40 people in a room, I don't think the local authorities did
What was exposed from the programme was that Meath County Council, you could say, was forced to put someone into subpar accommodation with no privacy and a bathroom within a kitchen.
They should never have done that. I mean, I always say to council officials that I've been a councillor for 10 years, and I always said to them, it's the family rule. I always say, if it was your mother or your sister or your brother, would you do that? And there's no excuse. Meath County Council have no excuse. Nothing at all. No excuse.
Acuteness of this particular crisis. The fact that the government are not taking action in a key range of areas. So why do we have, you know, a housing crisis at the moment? It's to do with supply and demand, but it's also more importantly to do with the fact that measures have been taken against the likes of Airbnb, who are sucking up accommodation, making them into holiday rentals, and it means that there's a dearth of adequate accommodation left for people
who
need it.
The dearth of accommodation is at the base of this. I just want to let David Cullinan here, because he's been shaking his head vigorously while you've been speaking there, Colin.
First of all, I found the programme to be a great piece of journalism, but it was very hard viewing, I have to say, to see the conditions that people have lived under. I also found it very hard listen to Colin there for the last few minutes. He's right when he says that those rogue landlords, and they are rogue landlords, and they are a minority of landlords in this state, he called them parasites, and he's right. But they have been allowed to operate in the manner in which they operate. They are allowed. The penalties and the sanctions which are in place to deal with rogue landlords are almost non-existent. So if any of these rogue landlords get caught, they don't face any jail time. They don't face any real stiff penalties. We heard that one of these landlords was earning €26,000 a week on the back of people's misery. And yet if that person gets caught, so what? He's made his money and he's gone. So we need much tougher enforcement to ensure that this isn't happening. But there is 340,000 tenancies in this state. The vast majority of landlords provide a decent and an acceptable service. There is a significant minority of those who are not. Many of them are under the radar. Many of them are not registered. The government has done nothing about it. Last year, Colm, the National Oversight and Audit Commission, which is the CNAG of the local government, if you like, published a comprehensive report on this very issue on inspections and oversight. And it found very little inspections, poor standards and lack of enforcement. Only 4% of all of the letted properties are inspected. That means that if you're a landlord, one in every 20 years, the premises will be inspected. So we need to get to that 20 or 25%. But to put this back on local authorities, yeah. Colm, I'm sorry, it's an absolute joke when you have cut the funding for local authorities year on year since your party has been in government. No, they don't have the resources to carry out
the
inspections.
Can I put this to Eamon Ryan, can I put this to you? If we have, let's say this inspection regime, let's say the resources are put into this, let's say all of these places are inspected and these types of properties are closed down. Where do we imagine the people who are relying on this type of a tenancy is going to live?
We need the government to start building new form of social housing which will provide that option. And I particularly want them to say, I mean, Colm said there earlier on that the Fine Gael had improved rental standards. I'm sorry, that's not true. Because they removed some of the... They wanted to bring back bedsits. We put in legislation...
A lot of people would now say, and I know that the minister has floated the idea again, that maybe that wasn't the best idea. That actually a bedsit with a shared bathroom might be a much preferable option.
No, I think sticking up for high standards of rental accommodation is the right thing. His government also reduced the standards in terms of size of apartments and aspect and a whole range of other issues to look after the market. Instead, what they should be doing, to answer your question, is it's in their own programme for government. It says it wants to introduce a form of cost rental social housing. It's a new form of social housing where you borrow long term and the rent pay on a rental property pays off that loan over a 20-year period. You get a mix of tenants in it. It's a new form of social housing. It's done in Vienna, it's done in other cities. They're actually able to do it off government balance sheets, so you can raise funding for it. We could scale up and provide the 80,000 I was reading the papers today, new apartments we need in the next 5 years just to avoid this being a crisis. But nothing is happening. They're not implementing their own policy, that's not accurate, Eamon.
Colm Brophy, you're saying that's not accurate. What's not accurate
about that? What Eamon does and what David and Sinn Féin and their spokesperson Ona Brin do occasionally is they zero in on a particular aspect of what is their own party position or their own viewpoint. I mean, I was on the original Oireachtas Housing Committee. There's many, many viewpoints on this. The government is pumping billions and billions of euros into doing this.
But you see, Colm Brophy, can I just stop you for one second there and just ask you, in relation to that very committee and the key recommendation out of that committee, as I recall, was that we would need and we would fast track the building of 50,000 local authority units by 2020. Now, Mel, you have the figures, don't you, for the numbers of local authority houses that were built this year?
Well, based on Rebuilding Ireland progress reports, there were a total of 75 local authority houses built in the first 6 months of this year.
In
the whole country.
And how many in Dublin?
And there was 10 in Dublin. All 10 of those
in Dublin. Okay. So that leaves us with... take that from the 50,000. What does that... Isn't this the stuff of fantasy, Colm Brophy, that this can ever possibly be delivered by 2020?
Look, the government obviously accepts this. Owen Murphy has made it very clear in statements he's made since he became minister that we need to ramp up what we're doing. And there are now thousands and thousands of between applications for planning permission and between the funding being there for construction to take place. So those figures are going to rise substantially.
But will they get anywhere near what we need?
We will still be dealing with this. We're not going to solve the housing crisis because the biggest single issue is the capacity to build.
We didn't create the housing crisis. I'm sick and tired of listening to government representatives. First of all, trying to blame Sinn Féin for the housing crisis, and Ona Brin has been one of those people. Sorry, Colm, you had your say. Ona Brin has been one of those people who sat on that committee. By the way, it was his idea to set the committee on housing up, and he put forward many solutions to deal with these problems. This is a crisis made by both Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael when they stopped building social housing, they forced everybody, including social housing tenants, into the private rented sector. What happened? Rents have gone up. The average rent in Dublin now, and I was talking to Mel before we came on air, is €1,700 a month in Dublin. Average wages is €2,200 a month. So how is that possible? So rising rents, growing homelessness every single month since this government came into power with the Independent Alliance, the homelessness figures have increased. We have people living in substandard accommodation. It didn't happen by accident. It happened by design because you, Colm, and your party abdicated your responsibility. And in terms of the targets that were set in that document, which was a good document, which everybody accepts, if it was implemented, would actually go a
this
long way to addressing
from the
problem.
The committee that,
not
that
one
Colm
single additional
in.
House over and above the targets that were set by Simon Coveney were put into this year's budget. Not one single additional, even though Owen Murphy, the Taoiseach, said that they would. That's a fact, and they've acknowledged that.
Yeah, and you know, David, because we have gone through this before. There were housing figures outlined by Owen Murphy just prior to the budget. So just trying to artificially, and this is again where I think we do a disservice to the problem which we're facing by trying to artificially just pick a thing of not one extra house was announced in the budget. The government's programme, and they've
over
made
and
it,
above the target set by Simon
very,
Coveney.
They've made it very, very clear is that there will be a substantial ramp up in the ability both to the combination of building houses and also using the private sector, which I know you have a problem with, but using the various programmes that are there to get people into
accommodation.
Okay,
I want to get Mel Reynolds in here because this is his area of expertise.
But can I just say, how we get people into a house to me is less important than whether or not we use a combination of private sector involvement or public sector building.
If we might just have a look at some of the facts at the moment and look at the disconnect between demand and supply, particularly in the lower modest income categories. We know that in Dublin this year, in the first 6 months, there are 10 houses built in the four local authorities. 10 of those are in Fingal. Last, it were scheduled to build 300 in the entire year in all the local authorities this year. Currently, Dublin City Council, to look at one council, have enough zoned residential land to build 11,000 units. Dublin City Council on their own. There's enough local authority owned land nationwide to build 45,000 houses, and we're building 300. So just looking at they're two very compelling sort of figures. But even just looking at, say, for example, as one example, look at Kildare. Kildare at the moment, they're the biggest, one of the biggest commuter counties. They're very wealthy in terms of you've Intel, you've got a bloodstock industry, etc. They have approximately 7,500 people on waiting lists, housing waiting lists in Kildare. They have enough land to build 2,500 homes, and they have built no local authority homes since 2012.
We get that picture now. And that is the picture right across the country. Yeah. Why? We hear all of these excuses for why. I won't call them excuses. Line is, it is not happening.
And if I can offer a column,
Mel can give his view on it.
I think there are certain blockages here. The inputs that we're being told, by Rebuilding Ireland, are getting larger and larger, and the outputs are not increasing. It looks to me as if there's no money for this at all.
Can I finish my point?
Yep. Thanks. The capital budget this year of 1.3 billion for housing. Out of that, currently we're spending about 730 million on five different forms of rent supplement. The housing assistance payment scheme, which is a good scheme in theory, is increasing at a level of 216 new families every week sign on for some form of rent assistance. So that's going up by 11,000 a year at the moment. So our 730,
and that's of course facing huge extra pressure into that private rental sector.
State-sponsored tenants. The homeless HAP subsidy at the moment in Dublin City is €1,700. So we're looking at the amount of exchequer funding being paid out just for rent subsidies for the private rental sector will probably increase next year to around 900 million, and the following year will be over a billion. So our capital spend in terms of what's available, and don't forget our capital spend also includes for pyrite remediation and defective units, etc., is being diminished year on year. And the number of state-sponsored rental tenants that are competing with normal private sector tenants is getting larger and larger. We have about 96,000 state people who are availing of rent assistance at the moment in the state, and that's increasing by 11,000 a year. So the numbers here are all going in one trajectory.
The fundamental problem is Fine Gael believes in the market delivering, and unfortunately the market is not functioning here and cannot deliver, and they failed for about 5 or 6 years to make an intervention which everyone saw was was needed. And I just go back to ask Con the question, am I not right that your programme for governments admitted that we need to go to that new form of social housing, a cost rental model? And am I not also correct that you have done nothing, there's not a single practical example of that actually on the ground, which could deliver it, which would not be budget limited, because as I said, you could borrow
and if I can, elsewhere.
And that's the reality, is because Fine Gael think the market will deliver and the market hasn't.
If I can offer an olive branch to Colm as well, because
this is
a very emotive issue. And this does have an impact on the quality of people's lives. And the housing crisis is real. And people's lives were put at risk. We saw that in that programme. So it's a really, really important issue that needs to be resolved. One of the proposals that was made by Threshold and others, and we supported, is an NCT-type certificate for landlords. Now, that would require legislation. I don't think it would be difficult to draft the legislation. So if the government produces that legislation, we in Sinn Féin will fully support its passage through the Dáil. And why is the government not doing these things? We have brought forward several pieces of legislation which have been voted down, which are in a queue, as Colm knows, where many opposition bills are not being implemented. There's money bills being attached to them. Just that one single issue.
We did ask the minister if he could be with us today. He was not available, and I haven't heard him actually out on this since that programme was there. But we have had indications that this is being considered. Is it being considered, this NCT type?
Well, I can't speak for whether the minister is considering it or not. I know that Damien English said in an interview on Morning Ireland, I think it was, that the government would look at if there was legislative steps necessary to change things. They would certainly look at that. For myself personally, I don't have any problem with it. I think that a system of regulation which would give some type of standard would be something that I would actively look at. Again, I go back to the point I made at the very start. I'm a little bit wary about the fact that, particularly for the type of parasitic person that preys on vulnerable people, I don't know if an NCT-type certificate would actually deal with that type of accommodation. But in general, as a way of helping and regulating the private rental sector, it's something I certainly would be quite
open. The solution to that problem, Colm, would be to actually have stronger enforcement and also to have stronger penalties.
I would agree with you on that, Colm,
but it's not in place. So if we agree, why can't we just develop the legislation and let's pass it in this Dáil term? Why the delay? If you support it, I support it. If everybody around the table thinks it's a good idea, why not? Niamh Lyons is trying to get in there.
One of the things that I found most terrifying about that programme was the fact that these kind of vulture landlords have identified a gap in the market. There is demand for this type of accommodation. So, you know, young people coming over here to study, they may only be here for 9 to 12 months. They may not want to sign a long-term contract. You know, someone like me needs an apartment with a car parking space. A family of four might need something in a commutable distance near a Dart with a garden. These younger people who are coming over to study need a sort of a hostel type accommodation. And that is being done in cities all over the world. In London at the moment, you know, there are buildings where you can just rent the room. You share a kitchen with maybe up to 20 people. You know, there are bathrooms being shared, but actually they are top quality, high class accommodation, and they're in high rise buildings.
So there's no political party. We actually made that as a proposal just a few weeks ago.
There's no political party's manifesto that outlines the type of mix of housing that we need in this country. And I would include
Colm, for professional people, a sort of shared accommodation. That's not really the demographic we're talking about here that requires this kind of accommodation.
No, I was just referring to the fact that the specific type of proposal, that type of accommodation in London, is something that we would see as part of the mix here as well. I want to go back just to that.
What I'm also talking about is that there's no political party that has developed a solution for the type of mix of accommodation that we need. So Eamon Ryan was saying we shouldn't have bedsits. Now, that's fine if the bedsits have wires hanging out of the walls and are in the poor accommodation or covered in mould that we have. But actually, there is a space for the type of accommodation that people need based on their needs and what suits them. And likewise, with the likes of, say, I think it was Joan Burton's first thinking as Labour leader in 2014, when modular housing was being suggested. And she said, you know, prefabs are a terrible idea. We don't want to go back to them. They're cold. I mean, people are now living in that type of modular accommodation all over the world.
It's actually happening on the ground. And I'm a TD for Dublin-based South, so a lot of this is happening in my area. And actually our concern, our councillors and the council are really concerned. If you look at the really big new developments down in the Glass Bottle side, actually we're providing massive amount of one bedroom apartments and a massive amount of student accommodation is actually being built. And I have a concern actually that those people also deserve to be in good accommodation.
There's I'm concerned that we'll end up... There's a guy who built a house recently who was on an RT programme out of shipping containers. It's an absolutely beautiful structure.
But the solution
nobody
to that is, not,
is actually
that
thinking
is
about how to offer high density accommodation.
The solution to that is not substandard accommodation. I'm not saying that that's what Niamh is advocating.
Absolutely not.
She's advocating something different. But my point is that quality is important and people's safety are important. And we saw what happened in London with Grenfell Tower, where if people are not protected, look what happens. So we have to make sure whatever the type or mix of accommodation that we have, people, we need to know that people are safe.
But isn't the bottom line, though, the bottom line surely is, if you look at how difficult it is for somebody with a good job, steady employment, references from previous landlords, and they struggle to get a roof over their heads in the private rental sector that we now have. Like, the difficulty somebody maybe coming in, as you say, from Brazil, from Eastern Europe.
I looked at the couple from Poland.
And these are the people who are doing, there are people, Colin Brophy, who are getting up early in the morning. These are people who are cleaning offices, who are in the gig economy, who are minding children, and they are their budget for keeping a roof over their head is £300 or £400. So where do we imagine these people are going to live?
Well, I mean, that's because, and we earlier on we were talking about the overall solution to this is the ability to provide a range of accommodation across a range of price options, which has to involve obviously ramping up the ability of the private sector to deliver accommodation, as well as direct build and building by the local authorities. That's the overall long-term solution. Otherwise, you will always have a situation where the most vulnerable people in society can be preyed on. But I think it is really important that we look, if you look back at that programme and what it shows, is that there is a section of people, I'm not necessarily saying the people in the programme or anything like that, but there is a section in our society which it's a criminal type of section that which effectively will look at any opportunity to exploit people, whether it's in the area of accommodation, whether it's in the area of drugs, or whether it's in the area of anything. They will see that loophole and they will exploit it. And that's why I think certainly, you know, in terms of this type of behaviour, the Gardaí should be looking at it as well as all the other people that are looking.
Just as Niamh Lyons said there, Mel Reynolds, what they've done is they've spotted the gap in the market. And, you know, what can we do to close
the gap in the market?
I object to the gap in the market thing. Because
there's no accommodation at that price.
No, sorry. This is criminal behaviour. This is the exploitation of human beings by providing an accommodation which isn't fit even. You wouldn't house animals in it. So I don't see that you can refer to it as a gap in the market. It's an illegal action.
And we'll not get a chance to respond.
But
Colm's party was warned time and again that when they abdicated responsibility and stopped building social housing, they would create these problems.
Now, I'll just read out a text we just got, and we're getting a huge reaction to this item, as you can imagine. But so much time spent point scoring and blaming each other, and so little time talking about realistic solutions. I'm just going to go to Mel Reynolds, who has put forward some solutions to this.
Okay, well, I think in this instance, we need inspectors and we need enforcement straight away, and these houses have to be shut down immediately. That needs to be done before people die. That's the bottom line here. We know also that local authorities themselves are guilty of renting out substandard accommodation. There was a recent Community Action Network appeal to the European Court of Human Rights, and it was held that there were renting properties of worse standard than those ones figured in the programme. So there's a number of people here. The real crisis here, I think, is the lack of affordable housing. And the gap in the market is actually, the gap in the market, it isn't so much a gap in the market as a complete tide line. Most, something like 94% of all apartments are being built in Dublin. 75% of all development is in Dublin. It all caters for the top 20% of earners. You have to earn over €100,000 as a combined income. The actual simple definition of what an affordable house and the target that we should be looking at as a state is building a family home for less than €240,000, which simply, if you look at the prices around the country, it's not there. There's only one model that have done this, and it's managed to happen despite all the factors against it, and that's the Ó Cualann Housing Co-op out in Ballymun, where they've managed to build and sell cooperative new two-bed homes to people not on the housing list, ordinary people, for €145,000.
And how did they do that? What was their magic?
Well, what they did was they got land, cheap land from the state for €1,000 a site. They have a profit margin of 5% and they built to current standards. So there's no need for shipping containers, no disrespect to anyone doing shipping containers. Currently at the moment in Cherrywood, if you got a mobile home for €40,000 and put that on a site in Cherrywood, you would sell that for €185,000. So straight away, a one-bed unit, 33 square metres, isn't affordable. The co-op model, which is a different form of procurement, and it's off-balance sheet, can deliver houses at less than these affordable levels to people, and it's been done. And for the life of me, I can't understand, given the fact that we have, you know, 1,500 hectares of state-owned land, why the state can't turn around and say, listen, here's a site, go off and do the same here.
Okay, we leave it with that question hanging. Coming up, should our ministers be allowed to go to North Korea? But first, we'll take this break. And you're very welcome back. Now, Mel Reynolds has had to leave us, but we do still have Colm Brophy, Niamh Lyons, David Cullinan and Eamon Ryan with us in studio. And we had arranged to speak to John Halligan of the Independent Alliance about their controversial plan to go to North Korea on a peace mission. But he's told us that the Independent Alliance has asked him not to go ahead with our interview today because there is now a meeting planned with the Foreign Affairs Minister, Simon Coveney, next week. And he said he was putting off any media until after that meeting. We do know, though, that the North Korean embassy in London has agreed to meet one of the three ministers due to go on this trip to discuss their visa application. And we understand that as of now, at least, this is still a runner. Eamon Ryan, do you think this should happen?
I think it is. This Callan Kicks running right through the weekend? I mean, I think it's utterly mad. I think Shane Ross has got enough to be doing. We have a transport system crisis. We're just hearing about the housing crisis. Coming up in the rails is a transport crisis. He should be tackling that and not swanning around the world pretending he can solve the North Korean missile problem. This is lunacy.
David Cullinan.
Well, I'll try not to be unkind. I would imagine that the people involved are well-meaning, but the reality is that we have a Minister for Foreign Affairs, we have a Department for Foreign Affairs. Diplomacy is quite complex. It isn't just a matter of three ministers on their own, without any support from a department, jumping on a plane, going to North Korea, pretending they can preach democracy and against nuclear power to Kim Jong-un, and then come back with all of the issues that the state is facing. That's what the Independent Alliance Minister should be focused
on. Okay, so you'd be against it generally?
Well, I'm obviously not against diplomacy, and we have diplomatic channels.
Trip,
but I think it's I agree with Eamon. It was mad, and I don't think it did the Independent Alliance any good whatsoever.
Colm Brophy.
Yeah, I have to say there's just sometimes you have to say what it is. I think it's a daft idea. We have a Minister for Foreign Affairs, Simon Coveney, does an excellent job in that role. We have a tradition of a state of, I think, being well respected. I think this is just something that, if it was to be done, would do just damage to Ireland, and I would be totally opposed to it.
Niamh, the Taoiseach was asked about this in his trip in the US yesterday.
I think he was kind of kind about it in order to nearly give them a get out of jail free card. He just said he wouldn't like anything beastly to happen to them if they were to make that trip. I mean, I don't think we actually have any links with Pyongyang from a diplomatic perspective, so there wouldn't actually be any way of getting into the country as far as I know. Now, some journalists can get in on a guided tour.
They have been invited to discuss their visa with the embassy.
Yeah,
so.
And obviously under those circumstances, they may get to meet some people from the regime over there. I'm not sure they would have actually had a private audience with Kim Jong-un himself. I think in a way with the Independent Alliance, this just goes to show, I mean, they can often get a little bit distracted in their work. Now, obviously, they're good negotiators because they managed to kind of wiggle a few things into the programme for government. But I think solving this particular one, it also came out of nowhere. I mean, there hasn't actually been much of this inflammatory behaviour of late since Donald Trump's outburst at the UN. We haven't really heard much about this issue. So I wonder why now. Maybe because Donald Trump's about to undertake a trade mission himself to Asia.
But, you know, there has obviously been a lot of ridiculing of this idea over the last few days. But I recall back in 2003 being on a parliamentary delegation to Iraq and with the express purpose of stopping that war 6 weeks before that war started. And that was led by no less a luminary than our current president, Michael D. Higgins. And I don't recall him being widely ridiculed for that. So
I attended with Colm. We had a parliamentary delegation to Cairo at the start of this year to try and help get the release of Ibrahim Malawi. And that made sense. But in both those instances, I mean, on the first instance, there was 150,000 people marching in the street against that Iraq war. It was our nearest neighbour which was involved in it. And I think we were absolutely right to kind of take a stand. In this instance, what is our connection to the North Korean regime? It doesn't exist. And certainly, what is the connection for Minister John Halligan?
Well, he would say he has a link. He has a cultural connections going back many years to
Link going back to his Workers' Party days. I think the Workers' Party would have had links with the government of North Korea.
Well, I think that's well documented
indeed. In the past, actually, not very good links, it has to be said, but links nonetheless. Listen, the trips that you're talking about that were organised in the past were done so they were cross-party. They were often done through Oireachtas committees. They have a clear purpose, a clear schedule. They're official. And that's different from three independent ministers who
but
then
would
said...
would they be just as ineffective as you're saying
well,
this
we don't
one
know,
would
but
be?
You see, these ministers were saying they were going there as individuals and not as government ministers. And how do you separate the two? So it was just... whatever about the good intentions, at best, I think we can say it was ill thought out.
And I think the real worry, I think, is, you know, whatever about us trying to separate it out or them trying to separate it out as ministers or individuals or whatever, coverage of this by international media and the exploitation of such a visit by the regime in North Korea would actually just be damaging to Ireland. And I think we have the structures through our involvement in the European Union, through our involvement in the United Nations and through the work of our own Foreign Office and our own minister, those structures are in place there for dealing with a regime like that. We don't need this.
Oh, okay. Well, we will be looking at the Dáil agenda, which will be a busy agenda next week. But first, Eamon Ryan, you're after joining us from the Citizens' Assembly in Malahide this morning, and climate change is on the agenda there.
It is. It starts this morning by looking at what we can do in transport. And maybe it relates to next week's agenda, because one of the things we have to, there's a consultation next week closing on the public consultation on the National Planning Framework. And I'm afraid, if I look at what the conservative nature of this government is shown in that document, because there's nothing different. There's no actually plans for developing public transport, for developing cycling or walking. There's no ambition to actually cut emissions in transport. And that's why we're failing. And it was really clear, just as I was leaving to come to this studio, there was a Scottish minister come up. And Minister Dennis Nocton is always standing up and says, our ambitions for 2020 were too, our targets for 2020 were too ambitious. We were given a punitive target of 20% reduction. We won't even get a quarter of that way. But the Scottish representative came up today and said they had been given a target of 40% and they'd actually met it 5 years earlier. And he said that actually one of the reasons is because they had political will behind it. And I think the really infuriating thing on the transport side, again, just one other figure out of the conference this morning, to look at Dublin again, but it's the same for Cork, Galway, Waterford, Limerick. Congestion in Dublin rose 3% last year. We're getting close to the point on the M50 where we'll completely gridlock. And so it's not just switching to public transport because that's going to lower our emissions and actually help. It's actually going to make the city and all our cities work again. And there's nothing happening. The National Planning Framework was just more roads. There isn't a single rail-based public transport project ready to go to tender. We cannot get cycle lanes built in Dublin, despite them being perfect projects to get the city moving. It's a lack of political will in a Conservative government who just gone back to doing it the old ways, everyone into a car, everyone in roads, all kids driven to school. That's what they're delivering in the vision for public transport.
I just wonder, in the Citizens' Assembly, I mean, we know we have Danny Healy-Ray in the Dáil. Is there any climate change deniers on the Citizens' Assembly? Are you coming at it from a basis of we all agree this needs to be done, or is there...
They're a representative sample of Irish people. I'm sure there's some people that there are there, you know, kind of who maybe are sceptical of the science, but that's not the particular problem. The problem I have is with the political and a government which says they're interested. Taoiseach Leo Varadkar said it was a priority, and actually he's doing nothing about it. And we're missing out in terms... I mean, I think there's a link today with what's happening in Athenry. The lack of ambition in climate is seen in lack of development of renewables. I think that's one of the reasons why the Danish are getting that project and not us, because this government does not believe in going green. It's starting to cost us.
I'll just put that to Colin Murphy. We are going to move on swiftly, Colin, but this government does not believe in going green. There's no political will to deal with this.
Well, as always, Eamon's been very selective. I mean, the government is actually very, very positive in this area. There's a number of things. If you look at investment in public transport, I think there's about 400 million budgeted in this year, and there's a desire to make sure that that is in promoting the area of greening out our public transport structure. We have by 2030 a programme to have zero emission vehicles and to switch the state over to zero emission private vehicles. I think there's 100 million going into the urban cycle and walkway scheme in
the
terms
one
of investment.
The one on Liffey's Quays has been stopped by Fine Gael councillors among others.
And, you know, so there is an absolute positivity from the government to doing that. I think you always have to respect Eamon, unless you don't want to anymore, that individual councillors at local government level will always have the right to look at issues and to have an input into that. That's part of having local government in our country.
Colin,
but from a government perspective, there is a huge
is
positivity towards investing in green issues.
Okay. We will be hearing more from that Citizens' Assembly over the weekend. And coming up after this break, we have to take another break now. But after that, we'll be doing they'll return next week with water charges refunds first on the agenda. And you're very welcome back. Now, we've had the midterm break. The Dáil is back next Tuesday. Niamh, first up is the water charges refund.
Yeah, there's talk it might not get through by the end of the year, which means that that people wouldn't be refunded. The Taoiseach was keen to blame this on the left parties. He's out on a 3-day trade mission to the West Coast at the moment. Actually, this legislation could pass very quickly because it has the support of a deal done with Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. So perhaps we're trying to shift the blame for that one. But obviously, everyone is highly anticipating those cheques, particularly coming in the door before Christmas.
Of course. Was the Taoiseach a bit rash, Colin Brophy, making that promise?
No, not at all. The Taoiseach was very clear was that the first thing that had to be done before the refund could take place was we had to pass the legislation. And to be honest, just to clarify what Niamh's remark there, the problem is that we have now in the current law, we have a situation where people can debate legislation and can put down amendment after amendment after amendment. Sinn Féin are playing politics with this, pure and simple. They've been outmanoeuvred consistently by Paul Murphy and his group and various other groups on this. So now what we have is we have an attempt to blatantly play politics. And the end result is when people who would have possibly been thinking of how they might use that few bob back in the refund in the run up to Christmas to spend on whatever presents they wanted or whatever, when they look and they see that envelope is not arriving, they can send a little note to their Sinn Féin TD to ask them why they're playing politics with this.
It's all your fault, David
Cullinan. I wonder playing politics now. So let's be clear in terms of the facts. Sinn Féin is not holding this up at all, quite the opposite. This legislation comes on the back of a report from the Committee on the Future of Water Services. They published a report in April of last year. Minister Simon Coveney promised us a legislation in May of last year. It never came. He then said June. It never came. He then said July. It never came. He then said August, and we had a Fine Gael leadership contest, and that complicated it. The new Minister for Housing and who has responsibility for this area said it would be in September, early September. It came in the end of September. There was one sitting of the committee last week which dealt with this in committee. All of the amendments that Colm is talking about, it sat for 4 hours. That's it. So to then blame this on the government, on the opposition, when the government clearly dragged their feet for 4 months on bringing forward the legislation is a bit much. What they also did, by the way, is this. They combined two important elements of the report into one bill. One, the refunds, and two, the excessive charge use. If they had brought forward a separate standalone bill on the refunds, it would have been passed in 24 hours. The issue of the excessive use, as Colin knows, is much more complex. And by the way, we're legislators. We have a responsibility to put down amendments. We have a responsibility to legislate.
What are these amendments? Could we keep it's these Sinn Féin amendments. That's what's going to slow the whole thing down.
First of all, it isn't Sinn Féin amendments.
I served on the committee, and there's an attempt to undo some of the really good, solid work that the committee eventually agreed on and came forward and through amendment after amendment.
No, there's an attempt to challenge the Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael deal that was done, which we don't support. So what we're trying to do, sorry, Colin, with respect.
So what elements of the deal are
are you trying to do is to first of all have better conservation measures, which was actually in the report, that and there were elements we signed up to. What's not in the report is the promise for a referendum on the future of water in terms of public ownership, equality for those on group housing schemes or water schemes. None of that is in the legislation.
What about the referendum on public ownership of water? Is that gone now off the agenda?
It's separate, but everyone has signed up to that. I mean, the committee did a lot of good work.
Did the Taoiseach not resile from that?
Well, I think in terms of the tranche of referenda that were referendums that were announced, whichever way you want to pronounce it, that were announced, the time at that was made clear that this is something that everyone has agreed to. The committee has agreed to it. There will be a referendum at some point. I've seen that report from
Leo Varadkar, where he said that he felt that now it was a moot point almost, because who would want to buy it?
They've taken on Joan Collins's bill, or maybe Breed Smith's.
Yeah.
And now, to be perfectly honest with you, the word I sort of last had from the government was that it had to go to a committee stage within a certain length of time, but that it would probably languish for a little while.
The Taoiseach last week, and that all we were questioning on it, is that it's going nowhere, never will. Yeah. It's dead in the water.
This is specifically the referendum on public ownership.
We've even called for referendum. And one of the benefits from it is we might take responsibility, as well as claiming ownership, which we need to do, but also take responsibility ourselves for looking after our environment. And I think that what David has to answer, and his colleagues, at a time when the EPA has come out and pointed out the fact that we've got 44 areas where we're pumping raw sewage out into our lakes and rivers, where we're swimming in our sewage, if you don't mind me saying, in Dublin Bay through the summer, that you can't just throw your hands up and say anyone can use as much water as they want, it doesn't matter, the cost doesn't matter, having an efficient and clean system doesn't matter. I think it does. And I think actually what I get here from the... Well, that's what I believe.
And
a lot of people out there, I think, I mean, it's lovely to get checked back in the post, but I think a lot of people are actually really upset that actually the money's not been spent in cleaning up our environment, in providing a proper clean water system. Eamon will know that
there was three reports that the Committee on the Future of Water Services examined, three studies. One was in relation to... Two reports were in relation to the relationship between charges and metering and usage. And it showed that in the short term, in all of the countries that introduced charges, yes, there was a small drop in consumption. But over the medium to long term, it went back to normal patterns. He will also know that we have one of the lowest public water consumption in the European Union. So Eamon knows as well 40% of the wasted water is in the system
itself.
I also know that your colleague Lynn Boylan in the European Union with my colleague Claude Termes agreed a water policy paper which is actually very similar to the one that is going to be introduced.
And you'll also
why is it that Sinn Féin in Europe say the right thing in terms of environmental standards,
but when it comes back to here, I think it's right what Colm says, because
the Socialist Party made Sinn Féin change position.
You also know,
not on the basis of principle, but on the basis of politics.
Let David respond. We
have supported water conservation measures. You also know that the vast bulk of the waste is in the system itself. You also know that if at planning level we can put in much higher standards in terms of making sure that we have all of the best technologies to ensure that we don't waste water is more efficient and it's the best way to ensure that we don't waste water. And you know that to be true.
Colin Brophy's been trying to get in there. One brief thing.
This discussion just proves why this thing has been held up, because every single time Sinn Féin tried to re-go through the whole argument again.
Hang on, are you saying there should be a guillotine imposed? Because this is what new politics is about. They're allowed to put amendments down to their legislation.
Would you propose
a guillotine?
Total sidebar on this. There's no guillotine in this, Oireachtas. I wasn't in a previous Dáil, but the way sometimes... The way legislation sometimes... I personally, if I was asked, would be in favour of the reintroduction of the guillotine.
I'll remind Colm of this, because what he is actually doing is saying to us, as legislators, please don't put on amendments because that's a logic. Let me at least make my point. You're conflating the two issues deliberately, but let me make my point. There was three water services bills passed by the previous government. The second bill had to come because they guillotined the first one and they made huge mistakes. They had to come back and correct it. They then had to come with a water services bill Mark 3 because again you made mistakes with your second bill. So mistake after mistake was made because there wasn't proper scrutiny of legislation. If the government was so concerned about people getting their money back, they would have brought a standalone bill before the Dáil that simply does one thing, deal with the refunds. We would have supported it, as would everybody else. People would have got their money.
What I'm instead, taking from all this is don't be expecting
else.
To have that cheque in the post
and blame
before
the
Santi comes. But that is, unfortunately, that is all we have time for today. Thank you to my panel, to Niamh, Colm, David and Eamon. Claire will be back in the studio next week. Until then, enjoy the rest of the weekend.
Saturday with Katie Hannan was produced by Anne Farrell. The broadcast coordinator was David Phelan. Research was by Leslie Anderson and Tom Norton was on sound.